We are happy to be joined on the telephone line. I know that because the phone is lit up by actress and singer Liz Vassy. You know her from CSI, The Tick, a number of television shows and movie appearances through the years. And we're so happy that she's called in this afternoon. Hello, Liz. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for calling.
Sure. Absolutely.
Let's see, Liz, where to begin. Let's start with this music project, Like a Girl, a wonderful collection of songs. This was a pandemic project for you?
It was. I kind of blame Hamilton because I'd seen it a couple times and in real life in New York. I saw it in Los Angeles, and then I saw it on TV. And I started off doing musical theater when I was a kid. I mean, I did like 50 musicals from the ages of 10 to 16 at dinner theaters all over Florida. I was in deep. And I watched Hamilton on TV during the pandemic, and it just hit me how much I missed singing. And so I just decided I'm terrible in the kitchen. Sourdough bread was really not an option for me. So I thought, well, I might as well make a record. So I went and did this with some friends and a vocal coach and some people she introduced me to that said that they would be glad to do the engineering and work on it with me. So it was really a labor of love, and I'm glad I did it.
Well, it sounds great. Some wonderful songs. Did you pick the songs?
I did. I picked the songs mostly because I think there are a lot of ballads out there in particular that I love that are normally sung by men. So I wanted to put sort of a gender-bending twist on it. But also each song means something specifically to me. Like I covered an Elvis song, and my late mom loved that song, Can't Help Falling in Love with You. And so that was for my mom. My sister was a Bee Gees fanatic, and so she'd always said nobody ever covered the song Words. So I thought, all right, I'll do that for my sister. One song was for my husband. So each one basically was very personal to me because of somebody in my life.
Well, they're all great. My two favorites are, songs written by men, Dylan's Make You Feel My Love and the Peter Gabriel song Book of Love. They're both great, great covers.
Thank you. Book of Love was for the husband, and Make You Feel My Love was for me. And then the other one that was for me, I'm a Radiohead fan. Radiohead's my favorite band. And so I thought everybody covers Creep, and nobody's doing No Alarms, No Surprises, at least not that I'd heard. So I thought I can't cover Creep because it's been done so many times and done so well. So I thought I'm going to go in with a different tack. I'm going to pick a different song. The Radiohead was the one that was mostly for me.
Well, finally, something positive from the pandemic, because it's a wonderful collection. I love it, and people can find it out there on many different audio platforms. But check out Like a Girl. You'll be glad you did. All right, I have to go backtrack a little bit. Musical theater. My day job, I teach high school, and I'm a high school theater director, and I've directed, 50, 60 musicals through the years. What was your favorite to perform in?
Oh, see, I knew I liked you. What an incredible job. But thank you. Thank you for doing that. And you're making such a big difference in so many kids' lives, I can tell you from personal experience. My favorite one, well, the one that I started with was Oliver, and I played Oliver in Oliver. And I was 9 years old, and I had... I'd been in the hospital for a while when I was very young. And when I went in to the hospital, I went in very gregarious and I came out pretty shell-shocked. And for some reason, I'd seen my sister in a musical and I said, I want to try that. And my mom thought, oh no, I can't drive her to the audition and watch her just freeze. I can't watch it, because I didn't seem to be the type. And so my sister took me to the audition and they cast me as Oliver in Oliver. And I just remember at 9, ironically feeling more like myself on stage singing than I did in normal life. Like I felt very comfortable. So that started my entire acting career, was doing that show. So Oliver will always hold a special place in my heart. I was 8 0 Annie in Oklahoma. Oh. I did South Pacific. I did Finian's Rainbow. I hit pretty much every dinner theater in Florida. I was there. it was a great way to grow up. It especially then going from theater into television. I was very clear about the fact that I think these creative endeavors should be a team sport. You know, like I came from theater where everybody is equal and everybody does their part and you all do it together. And I think you can always tell the TV actors who came from theater. I think their attitude's a little different.
Well, and so I don't have to sell you on the notion of how important it is to have arts education in the schools, whether people are going to build a career in the arts or not. All of the skills and the confidence that you gain from doing that will help you out in whatever you do.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I mean, I've since segued from acting into writing, but I have pitch meetings all the time with the heads of networks. And being on stage for so many years of my life, I'm really comfortable in all of these meetings. And so it helps with my public speaking. And it helps, like I said, it helps with teamwork. And it's helped in countless ways. I can't state it enough. I mean, I really think what you're doing is wonderful.
We're talking with Liz Vassy here on Dat Down. Well, speaking of writing, so you've written a pilot, you were telling me, and are you still waiting for some news on that?
Well, yes and no. So I wrote a pilot and is starring Marion Dungey, who's been, if you look her up, in absolutely everything. And it's being produced by Mayim Bialik Company, and it is with Warner Brothers. And so we initially sold it to NBC, and it's... is not moving forward at NBC, and there are a lot of reasons why things like this happen, and it's such an interesting thing to have to explain to people because you run through just a gauntlet of challenges to even get that far with a script. You know, you have to pitch it to producers, they have to like it. Then you have to pitch it to a studio, they have to like it. Then a network has to buy it. Then you have to write the script. But we got down to the last group of shows in contention, and quite honestly, there weren't enough slots. And so I'm meeting with Warner Brothers again, and we're sort of revamping it and going to some other interested parties and trying to see if we can set up a home at another place that is sniffing around. So, I hope so, because it's based on a very personal story, so I hope it moves forward.
Well, we wish you luck with that. I want to talk about some of the many highlights of your career. You started pretty young as a professional. How old were you when you got the role of Emily on All My Children?
I was 16, and I know, it was a fetus. The singing helped because I had to sing on the soap, and so I remember I flew up for my initial audition from Tampa, Florida to Manhattan, which I was in love with New York when I first saw it when I was 12, I think. I just fell in love with that city. So it was already a dream to be flying there to audition. I had a manager there. And so I went to the first audition, and they called me back. And then they called me back, and I had a screen test, and I had to sing for everybody, and I had to do a scene with Maurice Bernard, who's now in General Hospital. And at the age of 16, I moved with my mother and my grandmother, and we moved to a one-bedroom apartment in Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan. And we basically, you know, I call this the estrogen brigade. It was the three of us against the world, and it was a pretty magical time, actually. So was being on the soap. It was a great experience.
Well, and I would think that theater background must have helped a lot because quite often you don't get a whole lot of time to learn lines. It's often, here's what we're doing. Here's today. We're doing it in 15 minutes. Good luck.
Yeah, you know, but the interesting thing, too, is that since I was 16 years old and I had no basis of comparison. I mean, basically, I'd done a lot on stage, but I'd never really done TV before. I mean, I'd done maybe a guest spot, a commercial, but very small things. So I got there and I thought, oh, I guess this is how television works. You do 30 pages and then that's what you do. And so I think, you know, ignorance is bliss sometimes. I just had no idea that that was hard. And so my brain thought, well, I guess this is my job and I will do it. And then I went from doing that to doing primetime. And then you do maybe 6-7 pages a day that aren't even all you. So you end up doing 2 pages a day. And I thought, well, this is really easy. And then I did some movies and I shot half a page a day. I thought, wow, this is sort of inversely proportional to the level of how it's perceived. You know, movies are considered so fancy and you shoot them so slowly by comparison. It was interesting.
You have done so many television shows through the years, and I want to talk about, well, my favorites among them, because some of them we don't get to talk about much, but just, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, we had Yardley Smith on the show, and we got a chance to talk about a program we loved, Herman's Head.
Yeah. Yeah. I was playing a lesbian who wanted to be impregnated by Herman, I believe. I think I was like 22 years old, too. So it really was a very funny job, you know, of course, because every 22-year-old is desperate to have a child. I had a great time. I thought that the concept for that show was fantastic. And the cast was incredibly nice and welcoming. Yardley, especially. I liked her so much.
And you end up doing 4 episodes, one of the great ensembles in TV history of ER.
Well, that was funny because I had shot the pilot for Pigsty the night before I went to go work on ER. And Pigsty ended up going on UPN, and it was originally shot for NBC. So I shot the pilot till late at night, and I had this job on this show called ER. So I went the next morning. I'd had maybe 4 hours sleep, and I shot maybe for 3 hours. And I thought, oh, this guy I'm working with is so nice. He's really kind, and what a good actor. And I left, and as I was driving home, I had this epiphany, and I thought, oh, my God, that was Goose from Top Gun. I had no idea who I was working with. I was exhausted. I hadn't seen Top Gun in a very long time. So then I drove home, and they ended up cutting they cut the pilot together. They edited it, and they called, and they said, we'd like you to come back and do a few more. So I went and did, I think, 3 more episodes. And then at the time, Pigsty went on UPN, and contractually I couldn't do more than 3 or 4 guest spots on a single other show. So I had to leave ER against my will. And of course, I felt lucky for the other show, but I also thought, this is so stupid. ER is blowing up into one of the biggest hits. Having me on it will only help. But I had to leave. But the other interesting thing was we were basically shooting right across the street on the Warner Brothers lot from Friends, which was in its first year as well. So I just remember all of these people who are now absolutely huge stars just sitting out there talking, smoking cigarettes, playing basketball. It was now you look back and you just go, what a strange time when David Schwimmer is contemplating whether or not he can afford to buy a house because the show might not go for very long. So it was a pretty fun time.
Well, you got the role in Pigsty. Well, is there a sense of security there when you know you've got a season anyway?
Yeah, there was actually that job in particular. I remember walking up and down the hallway where my dressing room was and thinking, don't ever take this for granted, because I just have been, I've been hyper aware since I was a child, since I started so young, just the ephemeral nature of this business. So at no point did I ever suffer from the delusion that it would last forever or frankly, that it's always a meritocracy. You know, I always felt that there was a great deal of luck. I always felt fortunate to be where I was. And that show, I just remember in particular trying to remember every moment because I thought, you're a series regular, and that doesn't happen all the time. I felt a sense of security that I hadn't. I mean, I felt it a bit on the soap, but Pigsty really helped.
Well, going through your bio, and all of a sudden I came upon a show that I had forgotten about, and when I saw it, I flashed back and remembered how much I loved it and how I thought it was going to be a big hit. Maximum Bob with Bo Bridges. Man, that was a terrific show. It deserved a better fate.
Thank you. It was hands down my very favorite acting job, and I think pretty much to a person that worked on that show, we had a party right before the pandemic, actually. We had a get-together with everybody, like all the writers and all the cast. I think every single person who worked on that show says the same thing. It was the most wonderful experience. All of us would have done it for 5 years. All of us consider it a high point. I mean, there was something, just the way the cast gelled. The writing was Alex Gonza, who went on to do Homeland. I mean, he wrote the pilot, which was fantastic. It was a string of wonderful writers. Just everybody involved. The directors were incredible. If I had to pick one that broke my heart, it was that. And like I said, I think everybody else involved would say the same thing. So thank you for loving it. We did too.
You have been in both versions, the live action and the animated versions of The Tick. I have to assume that a couple of things. I know you were a big superhero kid, a lover of superheroes, but also, boy, that generates a whole new fan base when you play somebody like Captain Liberty.
Well, I got an action figure, and I have to say, for somebody who is a kid like me,
I mean, I own every single Star Wars toy that was ever created. I was very into superheroes. I like all of that was just, that was my childhood in a nutshell. So when I was handed my own action figure, it might as well have been an Oscar. I was absolutely so that first and foremost, that just meant the world. And then I went to a convention and I saw somebody dressed as Captain Liberty. And that also was just like, oh my God, I can't believe somebody with the torch and the crown. So all of that was just a childhood dream realized. And it was an incredible time. It was also really fun because, you know, we'd get in political discussions, the four of us who work 12, 14 hours a day. We'd get in political discussions and they would get kind of heated sometimes. And then we'd look around and we're all dressed as superheroes. And it's just intrinsically impossible to get in a serious argument while you're wearing a cape. Like, you can't do it. It's too laughable. And so there was something great about that set because it could never get too antsy or too angsty because we look like idiots. So it was a fun place to be.
And you had worked with Patrick Warburton before that, right?
Yeah, I worked with Patrick on an episode of Murphy Brown a million years ago. So I think, now he could correct me on this, but I think that's the first time we met. But we also, unless Grapevine came first, because we also did a show called Grapevine, but we were in different episodes, but it was shot in Miami and we crossed paths. So basically it had been two shows before the tick, and just also, I think, some social engagements, and we sort of knew each other through other people, but we were definitely buddies by the time that show started. And right. And I had also just done Maximum Bob, so I knew Barry Sonnenfeld, who directed both the pilot for Maximum Bob and the tick pilot. So and I knew Nestor too, because he'd done a guest spot on Brotherly Love. So by the time we shot the pilot for the tick, it was just felt like family.
So I posted on social media the other day that you were going to be on the show this week, and one of my former theater kids was flipping out because she was an absolutely huge CSI fan, and she wanted to hear Wendy Sims.
Oh, that's really nice. That's good. The coolest thing about that job, I get emails even now. I get texts and tweets from girls going into science and talking about wanting to study DNA because of Wendy, and I can't imagine anything that's more gratifying than that. So, yeah, that was a super cool job because they let me do a ride-along with the CSIs in Vegas. So I got to go to actual crime scenes. I got to take fingerprints. I got to watch three autopsies, which was just incredible. Like, I want to go back and do it again for no reason other than the fact that I was so bitten by that entire profession. I thought, wow, if I ever quit the business, it's because I've quit to become a CSI.
Now, you've also worked two occasions, I think, with, well, my man crush. I'm not ashamed to say it. My wife knows about it. Nathan Fillion.
Yeah. Well, the first time, we didn't even really meet because I just went to go do the Dr. Horrible. I was in it for a nanosecond, and I just went with a writer from CSI who basically lied to me. So he comes to work on CSI. It's the middle of the writer's strike, so we're actually marching outside Universal. And he said, you know, there's some people involved in this, and they really want you to come and be a part of it. And I thought, oh, how fantastic. So I went, and nobody knew me. He just wanted me to keep him company. So I basically sat there in the evil league of evil. I didn't see anybody else. So Nathan and I didn't really meet then, but we met on Castle. And when I showed up, he had watched, or told me he watched, but I'm going to believe him, all the episodes of The Tick. And so he was incredible. I mean, you've heard it before, I'm sure, from everybody who's worked with him. He's incredibly kind. But he goes well beyond what number one in a call sheet has to be, and is just so gracious. And so, like, he should teach a class in how to be a good number one on the call sheet. He and Scott Bakula were two people, and Annie Potts. Okay, there's three that I've worked with that left such impressions on me, how you behave on set. And they all were impeccable.
And you've been doing for IMDb TV for a few years now, a very cool series. Tell us a little bit about Riley Parra, Better Angels.
That came about because, I did a pilot in 2004 called Nikki and Nora,
And it was about, it always sounds tawdry when I say it, and it was actually a great pilot, but it's about two cops, two female cops in New Orleans who are also a couple, which, you know, I know the first thought that a lot of people have is just sort of Charlie's Angels and like, freeze. No, it was two badass cops who happened to be a couple in New Orleans, and it was a little ahead of its time. But I noticed that online there's a severely, or it's sort of changing, but at the time, a severely underserved community. I noticed a lot of women were watching, the pilot got leaked, and they were watching it because they were so pleased to see two lesbian leads. And I thought, wow, like if you're having to search out a pilot and you're having to work that hard to see yourselves represented, that's a problem. And so then I was approached to do it as a web series, and I did, and the same group of people put together Riley Para. It is also, very LGBTQ positive, and it was, about, I played an ME, who was coupled up with a cop, Riley, and, it had a supernatural sort of Buffy element to it, and it was fun. And I also ended up getting, I got an Emmy nomination off of that, which was totally a surprise, and, super fun to get to put on the fancy dress, and I lost, but it was really fun to experience.
And did I see this, I think somewhere on Twitter, that you and your husband ran a marathon?
Well, I kind of forced him into doing it. I've been running for years. I've been running for a very long time. And then my mother, unfortunately, passed away in 2012. And running was partially what kept me going. It really helped through the grief process. So I started to really fall in love with it. So then I made a documentary. I directed it and produced it, called The Human Race, a couple years ago, where I followed runners over the age of 50, because I wanted to know how long I could do it, because I thought, I want to run until the very end, if I can. And I started to find 70 and 80 and 90-year-olds running marathons. And I thought, well, this is amazing. What a great message to put out there, you know? And so while I was following them, I covered Catherine Switzer doing the New York Marathon. She did the New York City Marathon at the age of 70. And my husband is a cameraman, so he was helping me make this. And they invited us to run it the next year. And he kept thinking that we wouldn't have to, and if something would come up, that nothing did. So he ran it with me. We ran the whole thing together. He did a fantastic job. Now, I wouldn't say he loved running, but he liked it. And then I went on, I did the virtual Boston after that for Catherine Switzer's charity. And yeah, I'm hooked. I mean, it's, to me, it's like my coffee. I have to wake up, roll out of bed, and go for a run.
Liz Vassia, the album is called Like a Girl. Keep watching, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that this pilot finds a home down the road. But Liz, thank you so much for talking with us. This has been a blast. I hope we can do it again sometime.
I would love that. Thank you so much.